Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle. What a tremendous Wednesday. I had takes and takes and takes, including the one where all those losers were waiting for the plane from China to land with UCLA's three freshman thieves. But then Liz from Falls City called in and gave us her take on Blake Shelton winning People Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive Award, and this show came off the rails altogether. But in the middle of turning this thing into ladies' night, I did have three excellent guests. Mick Cronin, the Bearcats head basketball coach, Hockey Hall of Famer Paul Kariya, and Jacksonville Jaguar linebacker Telvin Smith. Alvin, hit the play button. First off, today I want to talk about UCLA basketball. The three UCLA basketball players are back. Back here on U.S. soil. Fantastic. I'm glad they made it home safely. I'm glad for them. I'm glad for their families. But I am sad for all of humanity. Because that scene at LAX was a joke. They were mobbed. Mobbed by paparazzi, journos, and plenty run-of-the-mill fools after they landed and they walked out of the airport. Probably the same run-of-the-mill fools who were cheering on the juice on freeway overpasses during the Bronco chase. I mean, seriously, that was a low point yesterday for mankind, for all of humankind. And it's not on the three players. It's on everybody else who showed up at LAX to shout questions, take pics, and roll tape on three college kids accused of shoplifting. If your reaction when you heard that they were flying out of China was to hop on FlightAware or FlightView to track their plane and then plan your path to LAX so you could get there in time to see them, then you need to take a long, long look in the mirror. And when you do, I'm guessing you might not like what you see. Now, if your job sent you over there, that's one thing. But if you went there as a spectator and you did it as a hobby, maybe you went over there with a few friends because you thought it would be ironic or funny. If so, you need new friends and new hobbies. Seriously, have some freaking pride and self-respect. And if you were glued to the TV watching every single update with bated breath, you're not much better. But at least you didn't waste time in traffic and then parking in an LAX parking structure just so you could run out and get some shaky footage of three teenagers walking out of an airport. If you did that, that's not funny. That's not cool. That's pathetic. There's absolutely no reason for their return to spark this level of response. They weren't political prisoners. They weren't hostages. They're college athletes who were arrested for allegedly shoplifting. Now, don't get me wrong. There are a few things I can think of that are dumber than getting arrested for shoplifting in China. But I'm not sure what's dumber. Getting arrested for shoplifting in China or rushing to the airport to see the dummies who got arrested for shoplifting in China. Tie for last. You tell me, who's the bigger loser? The teenager who created an international incident for shoplifting in China, or the guy who rushes to the airport to get a pic or an autograph with him? Just like it's not funny or wacky or zany that President Trump apparently got involved. I know the biggest cliche in the world is, surely the president has more important things that he could be doing. But in this case, he really does have more important things that he could be doing than having conversations about three UCLA basketball players. Just like he has more important things to be doing than tweeting. Quote, do you think the three UCLA basketball players will say thank you, President Trump? They were headed for 10 years in jail. End quote. The president tweeted that. And now it's up to Steve Alford and UCLA to figure out what the appropriate punishment for what's happened really is. And I got to be honest, if you're looking for me to give you a take on that, you're not getting it. Because I don't give a damn. I don't care. I couldn't care less what they do. You want to make them do extra conditioning? Great. You want to make them run lines? Sounds good. You want to put them through the beep test every morning at 5 a.m.? Outstanding. Bench them for a couple of games? That's fine by me too. Cancel the whole season? Good. Go ahead and do it. Because I'm not really sure that there is a punishment that fits the alleged crime of shoplifting sunglasses and possibly other items in China and the actual crime of wasting everybody's time with it. The real victim here isn't the Louis Vuitton store. It's anyone who had to hear about this story and all the different possible outcomes. So whatever punishment Alford comes up with, I hope I never hear about it. Because I never want to hear anything about this story ever again. We've already suffered enough. Because whatever Alford does do to these guys, and knowing Alford, probably not a damn thing, whatever he does do to them, it still would not be nearly as harsh as what they've already done to us. Next time you see something nice that you want, put down the cash. If you don't have enough cash, keep walking. It's not that hard. And if Alfred had taken 15 seconds out of that 15-hour flight to Shanghai to tell his 15 guys that, maybe this whole thing might have been avoided. Believe me, if UCLA knew that this is how the Bruins were going to start their season, they would have never brought Alfred back. Hell, does anybody even know how they started the season? And whether or not they won that game that they went to China to play? Hell, have they even played that game yet? I don't know. And the reason I don't know is because of all this Louis Vuitton bullcrap. I hope I never hear about this ever again. That was a tongue I slapped on my mic. You know how ballplayers get decals on the back of their helmets when they make a big play? When I have a strong rant or a strong take, I slap a tongue on my mic. It's like my logo. A member of the class of the 2017 Hockey Hall of Fame. We are joined right now by Paul Kariya. Paul, it is so good to have you back on the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. It's been way too long.
It's been way too long, Paul, but it's so great to have you back, and I appreciate it so much. The Hall of Fame announcement came a few months back, but you were officially inducted Monday. What was the experience like, Paul, and has it all sunken in yet, or maybe are you still processing it?
Well, I'm definitely still processing it. It was interesting, actually. I got a bunch of calls from some great friends that are Hall of Famers, guys like Eric Lindros and Joe Sakic and Scott Niedermeyer, and they all said the same thing. They said the weekend goes by so quickly. Stay present. Enjoy every moment. And, I mean, it just flew by. The 4 days, it was so much fun. Tamu and I had such an incredible time. It was unbelievable.
We're talking to Paul Kariya. Going into the Hall of Fame is always special, but you mentioned Tamu. The fact that you're going in with a teammate like him, what was it like to share the entire thing with Tamu?
Well, we had so much fun. It was just from the moment that I got the call from the hall. It was actually from Tamu first. He called me before Lanny McDonald called me, which was appropriate.
Right.
But from that moment on, you know, we've been spending a lot of time together, planning parties and events, and it's just been an incredible experience for both of us, and we're so happy to go in together.
Hall of Famer Paul Kariya joining us. It's amazing, Paul, how fast it all goes. I remember when you got here. I remember watching the two of you. In fact, watching you and Tamu do what you do on the ice really was something, literally from the jump. In fact, you yourself said that from the moment you stepped on the ice together in that very first practice, you knew that something special was going to happen. The chemistry was instantaneous. How would you describe what that chemistry was like and how did it come together so quickly?
Well, it was like playing with a twin, someone, you know, playing with someone that you knew exactly what they were going to do at any given moment, and Tamu knew exactly what I was going to do at any given moment. That gave us an edge, you know. We always felt like we were one step ahead of our the guys that we were playing against, and, you know, even when we played together in the game at the Hall of Fame, and it was like we were right back from day one. Nothing's changed, you know. I knew what he was going to do, and he knew what I was going to do, and we had a great time.
You know, it's even more interesting, though, Paul. The two of you personally really couldn't be any more different. At least from the outside, it would seem like it, right? I mean, he'd show up, He'd tape his stick in about 20 seconds, but you were so meticulous and so exacting. You'd go to bed at 10 o'clock every single night, and let's just say that maybe that wasn't Tamu's style. So how were the two of you able to connect in the way that you were when you were so different?
Well, you know, we are completely opposite people. Tamu is very outgoing, loves being out in the spotlight, and I'm... much quieter, more reserved, but I think that you know, we actually think a lot alike in a lot of different areas, and it was funny when we were planning this event. We were having dinner with my girlfriend Valerie and his wife Sirpa, and we were talking about planning for the event, and Sirpa was kind of getting an argument with Tamu about a few of the things, and Tamu was answering every question the exact way that I would answer the question. And Valerie, we're driving home, and she's like, I cannot believe how much you guys think alike. And people don't understand it, but away from, this is the same away from the rink. So, you know, we go about things differently, but, you know, when you get to our cores, we actually think the same way. We see the world in the same way. And like I said, it's been a beautiful partnership for a number of years.
It's so interesting. What a great response. Clones, how about you give me one moment so I can talk to you about a great product, Stamps.com. Listen, these days, you can get practically everything on demand, such as our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. So let me ask you, why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything that you can do at the post office, you can now do right from your desk. As an example, the holidays are coming up. My wife, Janet, is all about the Christmas card. We send out hundreds, literally hundreds of Christmas cards, and there's no way we could do it without Stamps.com. I'm going to print my own postage. I'm going to do it when I want and do it at home. Trust me, with the holidays coming up, you should do the exact same thing, and you'll thank me for it. Go to Stamps.com, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Jungle. That's Stamps.com. Enter Jungle for a special, special offer. A four-week trial, which includes postage and a digital scale. Do not wait. You want to go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Jungle. That's Stamps.com. Enter Jungle. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office ever again. I know I won't. That's Stamps.com. And now it's back to our daily jungle. Paul Kariya joining us. Both of you will be honored this Sunday at the Honda Center before the Ducks game against Florida as part of Hall of Fame night. Any idea, Paul, what it's going to be like to be back at the Honda Center and hearing from the Duck fans once again?
Well, I'm sure it's going to be an emotional night for both of us. For myself, spending 9 years in Anaheim, Tamu spending the bulk of his career in Anaheim. This is home for us. This is our home now. This is where we decided to retire, and it's meant so much to both of us to have the support from the fans and the people of Orange County from day one for me, and for a number of years for Tamu. They meant so much to our careers, allowed us to do and play the game that we love to do and make a living out of it, and you know, they supported hockey in Orange County almost for 25 years. So we're really appreciative to the fans. And this is kind of a way for us to show our thank you or show how thankful we are to them for the support they've given us.
I think it's going to be a very emotional night. Paul Kariya joins us. Paul, you mentioned Scott Niedermeyer. And Scott Niedermeyer said that there's nobody who was more dedicated to improving himself or maximizing his talent than you. And to hear that from somebody like Scott Niedermeyer, who was one of the sport's most decorated players ever, and that people would probably say similar things about him that he said about you, what's it like to hear that from him? And then where do you think that drive came from that you had personally?
Well, Scott and I are very good friends. We actually surf together at least a couple times a week, and we snowboard, and we have a good time together. But, you know, Scott will go down as one of the winningest players in NHL history, and I was lucky to play with him in the World Juniors and the Olympics, and we actually played in the Bantam Provincial Finals together. This is going back a number of years, but we lost. Scott never left the ice, played all 60 minutes of the game.
Wow.
And from that, you know, he's been a winner from day one, and has continued that on. So that's a very nice thing for Scott to say. I mean, as you said, I think that describes himself more than me, but very nice. But as you know, in terms of how that's how I was raised, as from my parents, you know, if you're going to do something, do it to the best of your ability and focus 100% of your energy to being the best hockey player you can be, or to being the best student you can be, or if you're doing an interview, to try to do the best interview you can do, like whatever you're doing, be present in the moment and do the best you can.
Has anybody ever played all 60 minutes of any game on any level before? That's crazy.
Scott, well, you know, it's funny because his nickname, I don't know if it was, we always called him the Natural, because when he would play hockey, he wouldn't sweat. I mean, he was such an effortless skater, just an incredible skater, and he literally could play the entire game because he never... he was so efficient with his movement. And even now when we go surfing, I mean, he's so natural and relaxed at it. I'm very jealous of how easy, I mean, he makes things look.
Paul, I love the fact, Paul Kriya is my guest. I love that you've taken to surfing because surfers are really a different breed. Like, I've done it a couple of times, but I don't get it. I don't really have the skill for it. But I did go to school in Santa Barbara, so I hung out with a lot of guys that surfed. And these guys were just a different breed altogether. What is it, for those who haven't done it, what is the feeling like, and what do you like so much about surfing?
Well, surfing is a very spiritual experience to me, to be out in the ocean, to be in nature like that, and to feel the power of a swell that may be coming from halfway around the world, and riding that end part of that swell. It's kind of like a mystical experience. But on the flip side of it, it's a great way to stay in shape. It's a great way to spend time with your buddies, and there's so many hockey players now that do it. Guys like Rob Blake and Glenn Murray and Joe Sakic, and Tamu's been out a few times. He was probably one of the best guys to initially pick it up. I mean, his first wave, he caught a wave, and he was doing unbelievable. But he is a little afraid of sharks, and that's probably a healthy thing, healthy fear. I don't have that, but I should probably have a little more of that in me. But we as hockey players, we've all enjoyed learning a new sport, learning a new activity like that, and getting a chance to continue spending time with each other after we retired.
Well said. And that's why guys pick up golf too. It's something different, something you can never master, but it's an entirely different experience than surfing. You know, Paul, I wonder, we've got a few minutes left. When you look back on your career, there were so many amazing moments. What sticks out to you the most?
Well, for me, when I talk about the highlight of my hockey career, what was my first Olympics in 94. My father played rugby for Canada. He always told me that the highest honor you can have as an athlete is to represent your country. So when I was able to put on that Olympic jersey and walk into the opening ceremonies, not just with the hockey team, but with the curlers and the speed skaters and the figure skaters, and to be a part of a bigger team than just the hockey team, it was an unbelievable experience. And to this day, I can remember taking that walk in Lillehammer and into the opening ceremonies. I still get chills just thinking about it. In my NHL career, the run that we had my last year in Anaheim was the highlight. You know, that was such a special run. Obviously, we got incredible goaltending from J.S. Jaeger, and our team came together at the right time. And kind of both situations, we didn't finish it off, but it was a huge accomplishment in Anaheim to get to the finals, after 9 years of coming from an expansion team. And in 94, I think we were eighth or ninth ranked going in. So to win a silver medal was a huge accomplishment for that team as well.
You know, Paul, you mentioned chills, and I want to mention something, and I'm not sure that you remember it the same way. We've got about a minute left, but there was that moment in Game 6 of the 03 Stanley Cup Final when Scott Stevens hit you late and he knocked you unconscious. I get chills thinking about this moment because you came back in that game and you scored on Martin Brodeur. Not only is that, to me, one of the most unbelievable moments I've ever seen in the NHL, it's one of my favorite sporting moments ever. I don't know that maybe you remember it like that, but I thought that was an amazing sporting moment in any sport ever. As you think back on that game, what kind of memories do you have?
I don't have any memories from that game.
I see.
No, I don't remember that game the day before, even game 7. I have no memories from that game, but obviously I've seen what happened. And, for a lot of people in this area, that's defined my career. And that's, I'll be walking on the beach and they'll come up to me and say, hey, we remember where we were. We were at the arena when that happened. And, I obviously it was a huge moment for myself and our team. I wish I could have remembered it in lifetime, but it was an incredible moment in that game and for me as a player.
I can tell you, anybody watching right or listening right now, if you were to call that play up and just look at it, you will get chills just watching it. It was an amazing thing. But then again, you had a career of amazing moments, iconic moments. Paul, I can't tell you how happy I am that you and I can get caught up like this and have this conversation, and how happy I am for you to go into the Hall of Fame. I think that was kind of a given. Everybody knew that. But now it's here. You are officially a member of the Hall of Fame, and I know it's going to be a really emotional evening in Anaheim coming up this weekend too.
Yeah, no, we're really looking forward to it. Like I said, the weekend flew by, but Tamu and I and our families will have memories that will last us a lifetime. We'll never forget those 4 days we spent in Toronto together. Made it even more special that we were able to experience it together. And same thing this Sunday at the Honda Center. I know that that's going to be an unbelievable experience for both of us, and we're looking forward to it.
Even before the interview was over, Paul, the response on social media has been absolutely incredible. So I'm so glad you took time for this. It is so good to get caught up, and I appreciate it very, very much. Paul, great to talk to you once again.
Thanks, Jim. And I want to say thank you very much for all the support you've given me as a hockey player all through
Mick
my career.
Cronin,
I really appreciate
is my
it,
guest. Mick, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Always good to be on, Romy. How you been, buddy?
Doing great, Coach. Everything's good here, and it's great to hear your voice, Mick, and have you back. Listen, before we talk basketball, you and I do both share a love of horse racing. Going
yes,
back to
do.
Your days at River Downs, you worked the parking lot there, Mick, back in high school. Were you able to get out and maybe see some ponies at all during your off season?
Buddy, I miss you. I was looking for you. I spent 8 days at Del Mar.
Oh!
I spent 8 days. I was on the lookout for you. Had a great meet. I'm part of Slam Dunk Racing, which I know you've probably seen that partnership.
Sure.
We won the San Clemente this year with Madame Dance-a-Lot, grade two, and we got beat a nose in the Del Mar Oaks with Beau Recall. So it was a great meet. 8 days at Del Mar is heaven, boy. It's tough going home from there.
I got to tell you, Mick, I'm so proud of you. I wish I had known that. I wish I had known you were there that long. You know, I went to the Breeders' Cup and I had to bust out of there for some reason, a personal reason. But the fact that you ran in those races, we ran once in the San Clemente. We came in second. That's a beautiful race to win. And the fact that you were in the Del Mar Oaks, Mick, I mean, you got to lay this out for me really quickly. You've coached at the highest levels, but what's it like to see your horses running in the biggest races at the highest levels?
Oh, I can't tell you how much fun it was. And to be honest with you, my daughter's 11, and both our top fillies ran in the QE2 Challenge at Keeneland, October 14th. So to have her there in the paddock, she looked at me and she goes, "Dad, I've never been this nervous." It was great. So we got a third. We got a third in the QE2 and the Grade One. So, but that, you know, to be able to experience it with my daughter and something we can bond over, and obviously any one day in Del Mar is heaven. But to have horses running there and in big time races and get a chance to go out, I like going out in the mornings. And seeing the horses and just being around it, there's just so many good people, as you know, that put a lot of time into that sport on the backside.
Brother, preach. I know exactly what you're talking about. I wish I could explain to everybody listening exactly what you're talking about, but that's some of the best of the best. Del Mar is so beautiful, and the animals are so beautiful, and if you've got some fillies that are running at that level, that's about as good as it gets, and it's hard to get to that. Mick, I could talk to you about horse racing for another hour, but let me talk to you about your team really quickly. In the season opener against Savannah State, Gary Clark scored his 1,000th career point. You have described him, quote, as one of the greatest kids that you'll ever coach. Guys like Gary Clark, you can't help but root for them. What is it about him that makes him so special?
You know, some people, Jimmy, you meet them, they just have an aura around them. You know, Gary didn't have the easiest of lives growing up, single mom. He's the head of the house to younger brother, younger sister, and he's just got a maturity beyond his years. And he's just a special person, you know. In coaching with young people, they struggle at times to pay attention. They struggle at times to focus. You know, doctors tell me this. I don't know. I'm just a ball coach. You know, the frontal lobe doesn't develop and people don't understand and think like an adult till they're 24 and get the consequences of their actions. And then you meet a guy like Gary Clark, and from the time I met him, you just look in his eyes and you realize that this guy's different than everybody else. He listens to everything you say. He's such a good person. He has his respect for other people. The guy goes to I find out that he's at birthday parties. Like of our fans, they send him, you know, nowadays with social media, I got a fan comes up to me and says, "Hey, Gary Clark came to my son's birthday party."
Wow.
I mean, it's just not normal.
No.
He's just a special guy. And guys like that, as you know, they elevate your program just because they're how good a person they are. Now, game time now, he's a killer. He can beat you. He can score. He can beat you with a block shot. He can beat you on defense as well. He was defensive player of the year in our conference last year.
You know, I wonder about that, though, Mick, because you've always said you got to have a bit of a nasty streak when you go on the court to be great. Does he have that, or maybe does it destroy that image that you have to be mean and nasty and dirty to be good?
Yeah, I think it destroys it a little bit. You know, I wish he was a little bit more selfish with his individual offense. He's such a team guy. But, boy, he's – you want him in the trenches if you're in a war. So it does dispel it a little bit. I think, you know, the longer you go in sports, you realize some of the toughest guys are also great, great, great people in any sport. But I know this. he's been at Cincinnati for, this is his fourth year, and the coaches in our league can't wait for him to leave because they're sick of having to play against him. He's that kind of guy.
That's the kind of guy. Cincinnati head coach Mick Cronin, my guest. You know, Mick, you won 30 games last year, and coming to this season, there's a ton of buzz about the team and the program. The fact that we're talking about you coming off a 30-win season and all this buzz is pretty remarkable when you look back at how it all started. There's this story that back when you were at Murray State, you played Cincinnati when they had an interim coach after Bob Huggins. You nearly beat them, and the story goes that you told an assistant, quote, "I feel sorry for the poor guy who coaches them next year. They have five seniors. They've got no recruits. Everybody's mad. They'll never hire me because I work for Huggs." Except, Mick, they did hire you. What do you remember about that first season?
I tell you, Jim, it was unreal. I mean, that I really did say that. I said, feel sorry for the poor SOB that get this job.
Right.
And, you know, and then all of a sudden it's me. And, you know, I just figured it's my alma mater, it's home. And if somebody else gets the job and makes it happen, then I could never have a chance again to go home and coach at my alma mater. So it's been the experience of a lifetime. I can't tell you how hard it was. I mean, there's just not enough adjectives to describe it. And fortunately, the leadership of the school, they were patient, and they let me build the program the way I wanted to, because when you want to be at a place for a while, you got to build it the right way, and you don't, because if you quick fix a home, it's going to fall apart. You got to build something the right way so it's going to last. And so it took us a little time. Our fourth year, we got to the NIT, and then since then, we've been to seven straight tournaments, like you mentioned. But we did have to have some patience. And, you know, in the sporting world, that's not real popular. The word patience and fans doesn't coincide at all.
Well, even with schools now and school presidents, there just is no patience anymore. So when you talk about how hard it was, and there aren't even adjectives to describe how hard it was and how challenging it was, did you always know that if they were patient that it was going to happen? Or maybe were there times where you thought maybe it's just not meant to be?
Well, early on, Romy, we had some horrible luck. I mean, you know, nowadays the NCAA is there because they want to be popular all of a sudden. They didn't used to care about that. So the NCAA, so they just made a kid from NC State eligible because they were getting killed in the media. They reevaluated their decision. I mean, that never happened. And it's happening more and more. And it's a good thing. Good for Braxton Beverly. But back when we started, we lost the number one junior college player in the country. They ruled he couldn't play because he played in a Nicaraguan summer league, Hernal Hall. Then we lost our other big recruit that we had signed when we got the job because they said he played on a team in Poland where other guys got paid, but he didn't. So we lost, and then the next year we had a McDonald's All-American, tore his Achilles. The following year, our point guard, Kashmir Wright, before he ever played a game, tore his ACL. So you start to wonder, when it keeps piling up, you know, because eventually you're going to have to field a good team. And we kept losing players. But fortunately, that we were able to get back in 2011 a team of juniors and seniors. We had a great team that year. We lost the eventual national champs in the NCAA tournament. Kimball Walker knocked us out. But like you said, you know, patience is tough to find from school presidents and fan bases. So fortunately, we were able to get through that and all those injuries. But, yeah, there definitely, I'd be lying if I didn't say that you wonder, is this thing ever going to be able to catch enough breaks where we can turn it?
Because there were so many breaks, bad breaks. Mick Cronin, my guest. Mick, one last thought. The American Conference has had some tough programs in the past few years, and now you add Wichita State. What does the arrival of Greg Marshall and the Shockers mean for the conference?
Credibility. You know, when you, they're a top 10 team. I think they're maybe a top 5 team. You know, I'm saying it's too early to say anything with conviction, but when you have a team that won 30 some games, they have their top 9 players back. They have a legitimate longtime NBA pro in Landry Shamet at the point. They have another NBA, future NBA player, Marcus McDuffie, who's still getting healthy for them. I mean, they're as good as anybody. Now, some of the, you know, as you know, Romy, some of these elite teams are all freshmen. And Wichita State is not. They're not only are they talented, obviously they're tremendously well coached, but they have some veteran guys, and they've been through some wars together. So I think they're as good as anybody. They're a contender to win a national championship. So hopefully we are as well. And it helps your conference. It helps your credibility with the NCAA selection committee, because that's really been our big problem here lately, Jim, is just getting some respect from the committee to get a decent seed and not have to. I love coming out west, but I want to go to Del Mar. I don't want to have to go to Sacramento and Spokane three of the last 4 years.
I feel you, Coach. Why don't we start in Fall City? Liz in Fall City. Liz, what's going on? Nice to have you.
Hey, Jim. How are you?
I'm great, Liz. How about you?
Well, I'm going to go way off of sports here and talk about Blake Shelton being nominated as the, or actually awarded, the sexiest man alive by People Magazine. I mean, really, who was the myopic panel voting on this award? Were they drunk or only handed blurry pictures of Blake? The guy is a fat Ewok disguised as a country hick who allegedly has talent. And with this guy being the sexiest man alive, I seriously fear that clones like Bodie and Pearland are going to feel like they have hope in the looks department. Anyway, I don't know what this world is coming to. What's next? You're going to say Perry Larry is the best caller of 2017? I hope not. Anyway, happy Thanksgiving to you and the crew. Thanks for the vine, and I'm out.
I guess we should probably rack her. Liz in Falls City literally just called this sports talk radio show to say, how can People Magazine award Blake Shelton its award as sexiest man alive when he's just fat? First it was Liz, and now it's Crystal in Green Bay. She is a first-time caller. Crystal, good morning. What's going on? How are you?
Really good, thanks. Hey, Romy, it's an honor to get a moment here. In light of the recent McCarthy takes, I decided it's time for me to throw my take into the ring. So here I go. I'm done listening to people calling for Mike McCarthy's job. To be straight, I'll happily take the wins that we've had over the last 8 seasons, over the records I've seen for most of the other NFL teams. I know we may not finish strong in the playoffs, but at least we make it there, and McCarthy is a big part of that success. And yeah, there's some problems. Maybe we need some eliminations in the areas of Dom Capers, maybe. But for now, let's leave Mike McCarthy out of that conversation. He's a great coach and a good and humble man. So with that, to the haters, I say F you. To the fakers, F you. To the wannabe replacers, F you. I'm cool. And to the quote-unquote Rick Star in Vegas, yeah, I said it, Rick Star. You know who you are. F you, too. Thanks, Romy. I'm out.
Wow, 4 F-bombs, Crystal. You wrote 4 F-bombs into that email? Here's another one. Hey, Romy. I know it's not sports, but Liz speaks for all of us. We were all thinking it. There's a reason he's on The Voice and not The Looks. How can People Mag go with that obese Dale Jr. over the true big sexy Bartolo freaking Colon? That's my take, and I'm not going to apologize for it. Thanks, Jenna in Maine. War Lady Clones, indeed.
War Lady Clones.
Freaking Jenna. Oh, I love her. She was speaking for all of us. We were all thinking it. There's a reason he's on The Voice and not The Looks. Bakersfield, Cali. Jessica, right to the front, Jessica.
Hi, Rome. This is Jess from 760. I'm originally from the 617, and I want to say, Bills Mafia could take a seat like their QB, Tyrod Taylor, or Peter Pan. That avocado ice cream eating beast is going to win the East. And I don't think Blake Shelton is fat. That's like saying Tom Brady is ugly. I'm out.
All right, Jess. Jessica in Bakersfield. I said, Jessica in Bakersfield, what's going on? She goes, Rome, it's Jess. Nicole in Buffalo. You're next up. War of the Lady Clones. Hey, Nicole, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great, Nicole. What's up?
I just wanted to talk about Nathan Peterman since you started bringing him up.
Good.
I got to see him play in the preseason. I thought he looked good, so I was super excited when I heard that they were going to let him play on Sunday. I know he was thrown into the game in a crap situation last week, down by 40, but he did lead them on a 75-yard touchdown drive. I think it was like 6 plays. Got to be impressed with that, even if it was, you know, garbage time in the game. So I'm really excited to see him get a chance, and I'm hoping he'll just, you know, throw some bombs to Kelvin Benjamin, make it real exciting to watch. One last thing before I go.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that I do think Liz spoke for us all, and Blake Shelton is not the sexiest man alive, and he is just fat. So that was it. War Lady Clones, War the Bills Mafia.
War Nicole in Buffalo.
Now, I'm out of money for season tickets, and the only thing I can do is go to the games, get drunk, find a little tenderoni, and take him home for the night and ruin him. I'm out.
That's the queen. Jacksonville Jaguar fan to the highest degree. So after we had Tubman Smith in, I said, where's the queen? Where's Danica? She's in. Quote, if I have to ruin Blake Shelton for the Jags to go all the way, I'll take one for the team. Like he's a slump buster. Look at the queen. Telvin Smith is my guest. Telvin, great to have you on. How are you?
How's it going? It's great to be here. Great to be here.
It's good to have you here. Really good to have you here. So you beat the Chargers on Sunday. It was a wild game. It included a fumble, two picks, a taunting penalty, a roughing the passer penalty, all in the final 2 minutes of regulation. What was going through your mind during all the craziness at the end of regulation?
At the end, I promise you, I was just excited. But at the same time, I said, man, we are literally trying to do everything in our power to lose this game that we out here playing with the mistakes that we're making. But we all rallied around and definitely relied on each other and pulled it out.
Telvin Smith, my guest. So you win a game like that, it requires a lot of mental toughness because it probably would have been a lot easier to lose that game than it would have been to win that game. So what's it say about the mentality of your team that it did find a way to win?
It's like you said, that we have developed that mental toughness, and I think that's what's been lacking here with that and a lot of other things that's been lacking here in Jacksonville. That we needed, that's a component that we needed to take on this journey that we're going to become a Super Bowl winning team. So again, that's what you just seen out there on the field, just a group of guys continuing to develop that and play for each other.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Like specifically when you were drafted in 2014, I mean, this team, since then, the team has been through some rough times, and you'd never won more than five games in a season since coming to the NFL, and now you're already 6-3. So if you had to put your finger on it, what is the biggest difference between this team and the ones that came before it?
I'll say guys are believing in this team. You know, the guys who are here, we believe in each other. We know that each guy is laying it down. We know when we come in on today on Wednesdays that we're going out there and we're working when we go to practice. And it's not like, oh, is this guy going hard today or you got to worry about this guy knowing this assignment. Is that accountability and the guy saying, I'm believing in this, I'm bought into this. Not because of some outrageous, but just simply because I'm doing it for the man next to me. This mentality is driving this team and is being the driving force that's taking us and continuing to take us to the next level.
Jacksonville linebacker Telvin Smith joining us. Now, back during OTAs, you got the defense together. You gave everybody a bit of a talking to because you felt like that group should be better than it was. One of the things you talked about was what's our mentality going to be. So what motivated you to address them like that, and what is the mentality of that defense right now?
It's like you just said. I've been here in Jacksonville. This is going to my fourth year, and prior to coming to here, going to Florida State, coming off a national championship, winning high school, going to Lawrence High, winning state championships, and going into the playoffs and things like that. So going through that the first 3 years, personally, it was tough. So coming in this last year is just the expectations of knowing that we put all the pieces together. We're doing what we needed to do on defense. We know that we have the pieces on the offensive side of the ball. But as a defense, we always say defense wins championships. So if your defense not playing at that level, I don't care how good your offense is, it's tough to go all the way. So in that sense, the first day, I sense that we didn't have that kill or be kill mentality. But now we developed it because, once again, it's not just me, but all of us, Calais, Church, Gip, Miles. It's just a collective group of us pushing each other. And like I said, when you refuse to let the man next to you down, you just seeing the effects of it, the results of it, I should say.
Telvin Smith joining us. All right, you mentioned Calais. The team went out and got Calais Campbell in the offseason. he has raved about playing with you and how much the team feeds off of you. What's it like playing with a big fella like Calais? What's he bring to the team?
Man, I'm telling you, when you talk about free agent signings, you know, I guarantee you that every team wish they can go out and sign a guy and he come in and produce the way Calais has for us. Not only on the field in numbers and production, but just his leadership in the locker room, and it's got us to the players all around him. And that's the thing that I feel like, you know, a lot of people was talking about, you got to come in here and be this and do that. This guy came in here, and he definitely did, you know, try and impose his will and say, you know, I'm here, you know, I definitely know the way to go, guys. Just follow me and this and that. But when the game started, you know what I mean? He didn't have to say too much. You know what I mean? Because once you see a guy, it's the NFL. I don't care how long or how good of a player you are. You got to go out there on Sundays and do it. And for him to come this year, I think he already had 10 sacks, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh no, he had 11. You know, when you see a guy come out and produce like that, obviously coming from a free agent, a guy you sign him and he's supposed to do it. But 9 times out of 10, most guys don't live up to that hype the way he's doing. And I'm telling you, just again, that's one of those things. How can you not feed into that and say, I got to go harder? You know what I mean? And then for the other guys around him, yeah, you got to chase that when he's setting a bar of 11 sets.
Jacksonville linebacker Telvin Smith, my guest, no doubt. You mentioned the success you had in high school. Now, when you were coming out of high school, Jimbo Fisher said that everybody told him that he was crazy for recruiting you because you weighed 194, and his response was, quote, all he does is play and lead and have a passion and have a heart that is second to none, one of the top guys I have ever been around in my life, end quote. That was from Jimbo Fisher. So what is it about the game of football that you love so much?
Right. I think honestly, to answer that, I don't want to. I don't like saying I don't know the questions, but it's the teammates, the relationships that you build, knowing that another man depending on you to do this. Not only that, I think, you know, when you make a play and thousands of people yell and go crazy, there's no feeling like it, honestly. And then on top of that, now, you know, you're talking about National Football League. When I think what makes me love the game the most is just simply being able to go out and show that who you are every time you step on the field. It's like no matter what, you know, everybody talk about your size and can talk about, you know, how good you are, how bad you are, whatever, how you can catch or whatever you can do. But when you go on the field, every time you prove that, and I think that feeling in itself, the respect that I gain or, you know, the one person that has never seen me play and see me play, you know, I think that drives me. And then from that, you just see the passion and you see the love and you see, you know, because it's crazy. Football has always been a family thing to me. We were raised on Boys Club, and it was a family game. So that's the way I've always looked at it. It's family. The guys next to me, they family. So you know what you'll do for family.
Tell me if I'm picking this up the right way. It seems like I know what you're saying, and you did a really good job of explaining it, but it's almost impossible to put into words what the game means to you, right? Like literally,
exactly.
Every choice that you've made, every decision you've made, all the work you've put into this thing, literally every fiber of your soul shows up on Sunday on that football field. Is that not what we're talking about right
exactly.
here?
Exactly.
Like your entire life.
Exactly.
So how do you explain to somebody what the game means to you when literally every choice and almost every thought and everything you've ever done has gone into that very moment when you put the pads on? That's what it is, right?
Exactly. You just said it. It's literally when every part of your body, and that's why somebody asked me one time or said the statement, you know, you got to make sure you have a backup plan. You got to make sure you have your plan B in case your plan A don't work. And my response was, I only focused on plan A because plan B was a distraction from plan A. Mm. And see, I dedicated so much to this. Is I know other things because of this. You know what I mean? But this is it. And that's what you see.
My man, there was no plan B. You burned the boats. The boats went to that island, and you burned the boats. You weren't coming off that island.
I ran across the bridge and burnt it. I ain't going back.
Telvin Smith, my guest. Last thought, and nothing but respect for that. Legend has it, though, you are the best Madden player on the team. Is it true, and is anybody even close to you in Madden?
Listen, I'm going to tell you. You know how the legend story is. You know, you win so much or you do something so much, it gets exaggerated. You know, I am the best, though. But the reason I'm the best is because I consistently beat everybody. You know what I mean? Yeah, I take some losses. You know what I mean? But consistently, there's no one who will sit down on Madden or any video game and beat me.
Good.
Maybe. Yeah, not Madden. Maybe 2K or something, but not Madden.
I feel you. Kyle, good to have you on. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, Drew. Man, Jill. Oh, man, I'm nervous. How's it going?
Once again, that happened a year ago today. So you kicked that thing around. I determined that Kyle in Green Bay somehow, some way, managed to call me Drew the Jumpman Jewett. That's my best nickname.
Hey, I'm great, Drew. The Jumpman Jewett. Oh, man, I'm nervous. How's it going?
That's incredible. He turned Jim Rome into Drew the Jumpman Jewett. And since then, you've heard me read tweets and emails that start, "Dear Drew, yo, Jumpman, hey, Jewett." And if you missed that call, you probably have no idea why the hell those tweets and emails start that way. Now you know. And we are 1 year to the date that Kyle made that call. And 1 year later, that same dude who somehow turned a three-letter, one-syllable name into a 19-letter, six-syllable gloss for the ages is on the phone right now. Let's go to Green Bay. Kyle. Happy anniversary, bro. What's up?
Happy anniversary, Rome. How's it going?
Dude, you almost did it again.
I was been on hold for a little bit, so. But
I got to ask you something, Kyle. You sound pretty smooth today compared to a year ago. How did that happen, and how nervous were you? What was going through your mind when you made that call at that time?
Well, I was working. I was in my car, and I didn't know like when you were going live, so I was on speakerphone, and all of a sudden I hear, "Hey, we're going to Green Bay," and I was like, "Holy crap, I am not ready." It was like a bucket list thing for me to do my whole life since like middle school, so I thought I ruined it. I was bummed out, and then on the tail end, my Twitter exploded, and here we are today, 1 year later.
Oh, that's great. So initially, you might have been embarrassed. You might have been disappointed. How long before you were proud?
I posted a Facebook status like right after it happened. All my friends were like, "Dude, I got to hear this." Some of them heard it live and had no idea it was me. And as soon as I put the Stucknut link up, people were just laughing. I took it off the chest. I'm like, "It's pretty awesome. Jim Rome roasted me. I can't complain about that."
Attaboy. Well done. So do people still ask you about it?
Oh, people ask me about it all the time. I moved to Arizona for 7 months. I showed my buddies out there, and they thought it was hilarious. So, you know, I did a Green Bay clone stop. We're going to Detroit in a couple weeks for Detroit clone stop with Josh in Detroit and Nick in West Michigan. So, and then I met Luke in Fort Collins, so it's been a real fun year, and I'm ready for year two.
All right, bro, listen, you're coming together. I can see you're raising your game up, but understand, a clone stock has to consist of at least 10 people. Three does not make a stock, much less a clone stock. You know that, right?
Yeah, well, we try to get more, but it's Thanksgiving weekend, so we're going to try to do it again in a couple months and try to get more.
Maybe you pick a different weekend than Thanksgiving weekend. I wouldn't have it on Christmas Day either. All right, so listen,
Because
you've raised your game up, are you going to attempt to rip a golden ticket for the 2018 Smack Off? Do you feel like you've got that in you now?
I feel like I do. It's kind of hard because all the clones are so nice to me on Twitter, but I got one target, Caleb in Green Bay, and he'll be easy target bait for me to get a golden ticket this year.
Thank you so much for listening. The Jim Rome Podcast, episode 13, is now live with Icarus filmmaker Brian Fogel. Do yourself a favor, give that one a listen. You're definitely going to want to hear this conversation, and I know you'll pass it along. Trust the podcast. See you next time. I'm out.